Coming up next on the Witness the World podcast, the world of DeFi.
If we think about decentralization and Web3, it's also essentially about having one company in charge of all of the server and all of the data. So the example that I always like to use, Twitter or Facebook, they have their own conditions, terms and conditions. We all know that there are a lot of content creators on both of those platforms, but those people don't even own their data or their content. And essentially, if Facebook or Twitter decides they don't like what you're posting, they can just cancel you at any time. So that's kind of the things we're trying to overcome with Web3 and decentralization. It's to give the power back to the people, to have allow them to have more ownership.
The Witness the World podcast represents the personal views of the host and guests at the time of recording. These views may change over time. The content here is for informational and entertainment purposes only. Any content here should not be construed as financial, medical, or any other type of professional advice. Please consult with a qualified practitioner should you require any professional advice. Welcome to episode 17 of the Witness the World podcast. My name is Ben Choi, and today we'll be heading to Switzerland. Our guest is a web designer, writer, and marketing specialist. She's also a podcaster and covers all things from the decentralized world of finance. Today, we'll learn about her journey and how she's on a mission to transform the way we do banking. We'll also explore how blockchain and other similar technologies can enhance and empower the lives of everyone around the world. Karen Shidlow, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's really a great pleasure to be part of your wonderful podcast.
Thank you. Great to have you here. So, Karen, for the people that don't know, you also go by the name of Blockchain Babe in the online circles. I think that name is very appropriate for what you do now. So I'm just wondering if you can kind of take us back a little bit and tell us a little bit about your path to becoming the Blockchain Babe. I know you have a background in media, web design, some marketing. But maybe 10, 15 years ago, maybe this was not the plan to begin with. So I just wanted to hear a little bit about your background story and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, sure. So actually, I never really had a big interest in finance, to be honest. I've always been a very creative person. So I think the way that I imagined my career was always through more creative things like design, whether that be like graphic design, or I worked in advertising agencies doing multimedia design. But eventually I became quite interested in social media as I saw it start to really evolve. There was a certain point when Facebook like was huge and everyone started doing like, you know, experimenting with Facebook advertising and then all of this content creation and then Instagram. And because I am creative, I also love writing and reading. So I became more interested in how a brand tells the entire story and not just to work on like one graphic and pass it on. I wanted to be more involved. So I went back to study digital marketing and I was looking for an opportunity and I found Fiat 24. And previously, like, as I said, I didn't necessarily have a previous interest in finance or crypto or blockchain. But as soon as I started learning about it, I became really hooked. And over the past now over a year, I have become, as you said, the blockchain babe. And I'm really involved, not just for what I do at Fiat24, but also in general to create content in the Web3 space at large, because I'm very excited about the technologies. I think more and more people should learn more about decentralization. I think it can really be a really wonderful solution to the web that we know and experience now, because there are a lot of issues, but I'm sure we'll get into that later.
Thanks for that background, Kieran. So yeah, let's dive into that. So I think it was probably a good idea for us to kind of start off with, maybe having you help us understand a little bit about the differences between, the DeFi or decentralized world of finance, that world versus the traditional world of finance or the more centralized world of finance. Maybe you could tell us, like, on a high level, like, what are the key differences between the two?
Well, I think first of all, if you've been watching the news even over the past year, you will have read that there have been quite a lot of banking scandals, collapses, and bankruptcies. But regardless, since 2008, there's been more and more mistrust in banking and traditional finance. And I think people maybe are starting to become a little bit more aware that where we keep our money is not necessarily so secure. So all our lives we've been used to just, it's by default, you have money and you open a bank account. But decentralization, I think it will inevitably coexist with traditional finance. I don't think there will be a world where, overtakes banking or traditional finance. They will work together. But essentially, DeFi or decentralized finance gives people a chance to circumvent the intermediary or this middleman, which is currently the bank. So essentially, because all of the data and the ledger is on the blockchain, there is no one centralized party who is controlling it. And if we think about decentralization and Web3, it's also having one company in charge of all of the server and all of the data. So the example that I always like to use is Twitter or Facebook. They have their own conditions, terms and conditions. We all know that there are a lot of content creators on both of those platforms, but those people don't even own their data or their content. And essentially, if Facebook or Twitter decides they don't like what you're posting, they can just cancel you at any time. So that's kind of the things we're trying to overcome with Web3 and decentralization. It's to give the power back to the people, to have for, allow them to have more ownership.
Yeah, I like that. Give power back to the people. That's a good theme there. So, I think one of the points you mentioned there is trust, and like you alluded to, the trust in the banking system. It's not quite what it used to be, given what's happening around the world. And I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that shortly. But broadly speaking, like, how do we get to a point where we do trust, let's say, the decentralized world of finance a little bit more? Because right now it's very new. And when you have something that's new, people, are a little afraid because they haven't seen it before, they don't understand how it works, and they feel more comfortable, with the status quo, which is the centralized world of finance. So how are we going to get to that point for greater adoption to the DeFi world? Does it come down to maybe more regulation, or perhaps, people just have to take it upon themselves to learn this a little more? I just wonder what are your general thoughts on how we kind of get to that trust point that to bring it up a little bit higher?
Well, I think you raised some good points. I think it will be a combination of things. So, first of all, I think people are inherently, the general population are inherently a little bit afraid of crypto at the moment because, first of all, just reading the news, there are a lot of also scandals and scams and hacks that maybe deters people from, I don't know, like seeing it really as a viable alternative. But the other problem is that I've seen is that it's not the easiest technology to understand or use at the moment. So I think that once we start to see like crypto wallets or other decentralized applications that mimic the Web 2 or the current applications that we currently have, that will help a little, because if we can hide the technology, behind and you just open an app and it all looks quite familiar, that would also help. And finally, yes, I think regulation is 100% necessary. I think there are a lot of wonderful projects who are working really hard to build great services that can benefit people all over the world. But, for us who are building these great services and working hard, we would actually welcome regulation because it means we can do our job and be able to onboard people because we can build that trust that's missing. So yeah, overall, I would say education and making it more user-friendly, and of course, regulation will help.
Thanks for that overview, Karen. So it sounds to me that from your perspective that, the centralized world of finance and the decentralized world of finance, it's not a us versus them mentality. It's more of a collaboration and partnership. And that's kind of the way we should kind of look at it. And I guess with regulation, maybe we just kind of work together to find a solution that, meets the needs of everybody, I guess, around the world. And part of that solution is building the, I guess, the building blocks, the foundation of the DeFi world. And we were talking about blockchain, and no, not everyone knows too much about blockchain and the technology behind it. So I think it would be a good time now to maybe if you can just share a little bit about like, how blockchain works and why that system is, more trusted for some people, and how that could help us, build a stronger financial system.
So essentially, blockchain is, if we put it in simple terms, is essentially just a distributed database that maintains a continuously growing list of ordered records, which we call blocks, which is why it's called blockchain. But just like with a traditional finance, where you have a ledger that is on a server that is owned by the bank, and then every time you do transactions, it's there. Rather, instead in DeFi, it's all on the blockchain, which is public, and it allows for a lot more transparency. So it is essentially decentralized, it's distributed, and we have this public digital ledger that's used to record transactions across many computers. Also, and this is important, so that the record cannot be altered retroactively. So that's a big difference between what we see banks doing.
How can we like utilize blockchain for, just strengthen financial system? And maybe what if you know of any other, typical applications that it can be used for, just to make things maybe more faster, quicker, and better for the future?
Well, I would say perhaps a lot of people around the world don't face the problem of having an unstable or manipulated currency. However, if you live in a country where, you can't really rely on your own currency, then I think blockchain and cryptocurrencies offer a great solution for that. Also, if you're trying to send money from one part of the world to the other, for example, nowadays, if I use TransferWise to send money to a freelancer in Vietnam, it can take up to 5 business days till he gets it. If I don't have that much time to wait, blockchain is perfect because it's really the transaction settlement time is so fast because it doesn't require verification by a central authority. Of course, we have cost savings. We can just exchange items of value directly. We have less participants to deal with because we have access to a shared ledger. And also for security, blockchain is pretty good because it can help to protect against tampering, fraud, cybercrime. I think in DeFi specifically, it has a very strong use case, but I can also imagine in terms of healthcare or, yeah, I mean, there are many other industries that could really benefit from the blockchain.
So I thought we would just do a little quick section now about just kind of cover fact or fiction in terms of the DeFi world. There's a lot of different information out there on the internet and different talking points out there depending on what kind of media source you go to. And I thought we would kind of pick your brain a little bit on a few topics that are commonly asked about in this world. And yeah, we'd just be curious to get your take on it. So I have a few topics here I'd like to go over. So you ready to go?
Yeah, ready.
Okay, perfect. So first one I got here, fact or fiction? Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are only used for illicit activity.
That is definitely not true. I think even though people can use it for those purposes, I think now as the crypto community is growing, I think we can all start to kind of see that people are treating crypto as another investment, as an asset. They hold it. And also, maybe we'll talk about this later, but also cryptocurrencies can help solve a lot of problems around the world. So I would say it's not true, even though there are still a lot of illicit activities. I think these numbers have dropped as of late.
I think it's also good to point out that even in the traditional or centralized financial world, I mean, there's been obviously money laundering and all sorts of other kind of criminality that has gone through the system there. So I guess from my take, there could be illicit activity in whatever you do there. It's just, is it rampant or is it not? So I guess from your point of view, it's not a high percentage of the transactions that happen overall.
That's true.
Okay, so let's go for item number two here. So, fact or fiction, mining Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are bad for the environment. What do you think?
I'm not sure if to say fact or fiction. I think it's currently a topic that is still really being discussed. I think finally I saw over the past year that people and companies are starting to address this point and to take it a lot more seriously. And I think that's a really great thing to see. And I think it could only really get better because now I really have started to see like a lot of companies be really prudent about it and trying to take it seriously.
I think one point that gets missed is the people that want to, look at, the decentralized world of finance and say like the energy consumption. I don't think there's been a really good independent, third party kind of study to say in the centralized world, if you add up all the energy usage from all the banks, the servers, and all the different aspects of the banking, world and what they need. I don't think anyone's done a full-on tally to see how much energy consumption that is, carbon footprint, and all that kind of stuff, versus, let's say, you have like a Bitcoin mining operation. And of course, there's different types of mining operations with different fuel sources, that sort of things. But I don't think anyone independently has done that. So I think the jury is still out. And I have noted that there are a lot of Bitcoin mining places that use renewables and they try to shift towards that. And so I think the conversation is ongoing in my mind, and I think we still need to know more. So yeah, thanks for your take there. And so we'll go to the third item here. So fact or fiction, Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, they aren't real money. What do you say?
Well, I would say that's probably a fact. I mean, money as we know it is in the form of paper and coins, and they're tangible. Some people do refer to crypto as the magic internet money. I think that in general, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies are a lot more than just money. So I think that they are assets that, they are so connected into blockchain, and Ethereum itself is an ecosystem that, powers the Ether currency or token, but it's also building block for NFTs and for DeFi applications. And I think that it has so much utility and potential. It has actually more value than the paper money that we're used to spending. So I would say, yes, we can use it as a type of currency, as a way of payment, but there is actually a lot more to it than just that.
Interesting. So, I guess the next follow-up question to that is like, how do we define what is money? Because I guess on one hand, we need to get the adoption. People need to, transact in Bitcoin, and we need mass adoption for that to be really, for people to really feel comfortable using that. And then the other part is having countries to, have that authorized as legal tender, as El Salvador, and I think a couple other countries have done that. So I just wonder, yeah, like when do we get the, how do we get to that point for it to become money? Or maybe it doesn't become money, it just becomes its own thing in another category. Where do you see the evolution of the use case for Bitcoin for mass adoption?
I think it's pretty complex. So every country has their own regulation, every country has their own currency, and every government has their own systems in place for taxes. I think banks and government will never truly embrace a digital alternative because they need to have that kind of control, unfortunately. But I do think that crypto has many use cases apart from being an investment, which a lot of people like view it as. I think that it can and will be used as an alternative, as another way of making digital payments that just work better. For example, like I said, if I want to pay you or send you money, we're in different countries, we have different banks, and we use different currencies. I think it would take like a good couple of days till you receive it, Whereas, and it could also be quite expensive going through the different exchanges, Forex exchange. If I just send you some Bitcoin or some Ethereum, you'll get it instantly, and we don't have to deal with this conversion. So that's one way that I think that cryptocurrencies will be used. I don't think it will ever really replace money as we know it. It will just be a wonderful alternative which you can use when you need to.
Thanks for sharing that, Karen. So it's again, I guess it's on this theme of DeFi, Bitcoin, other cryptos. It's complementary to the system we have there. And so I guess another thing on the money aspect and how to define money. I want to know a little bit about, the fact that Bitcoin, different than other cryptocurrencies, it's got a limited supply of 21 million. And you talked about the control aspect, like that's a finite limit. Whereas now we've got different countries around the world. They want to create the central bank digital currency. It's not finite. They can manipulate that, increase or decrease as they see fit. That's kind of being rolled out to some countries and being proposed on other countries. So my next question to you is, central bank digital currencies, are they more trustworthy than, let's say, a Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, or other fiat currencies? Is that a fact or fiction? They should be more trustworthy. What do you think?
Well, I'm not sure if they would really be more trustworthy, seeing as I think that there will be like a lot of governments or banks that will try to take over CBDCs and issue them. So, I think on one hand, there are some advantages to CBDCs. On the other hand, if we're talking about giving people more ownership or control or stepping away a bit from traditional finance or centralized institutions, then I'm not sure that they could really provide as much as other cryptocurrencies can because it's backed by a government and controlled by a central bank. So, as you said, it's also not unlimited. So, in that case,
I see. Okay. And just to follow up on the trust aspect here. So you were mentioning earlier about the banking crisis and different things like this. So in your native Switzerland there was one of the biggest banking crises on a global scale. Credit Suisse was kind of, merged into UBS. I guess they were just forced into that. And just curious to know, what do you hear from people, on the ground, at the stores you talk to that you know? How do they, what do they feel like with their banking system today there? Did they think this was a long time coming? And are they now more open to, dabbling with the decentralized world of finance, learning about that, maybe diversifying into that? Yeah, just wondering, what are you seeing on the ground? How has trust changed? Has it shifted? Or maybe it hasn't? Or maybe they want more regulation. Just wondering, yeah, what are your thoughts?
So one thing that is really positive about Switzerland is I think they've always had a quite a progressive viewpoint on banking and privacy. And this also is true with cryptocurrency regulation. After Silvergate, I think we've and Signature Bank and Silicon Valley, we saw a lot of companies from around the world flocking to Switzerland. We do have a lot of crypto-friendly banks. In general, here there is a very open attitude towards digital money. We have Lugano, I think it is, that accepts Bitcoin as a legal tender, as a currency. And Switzerland itself would really like to be known as the crypto nation. I think we all know that Switzerland has a really world-leading financial history. It's really quite lucrative and innovative. One of the great things is that the Swiss franc, the currency, is very stable. So I think there are a lot of attractive points here. Yeah, I think about the Credit Suisse drama. I'm not sure I'm super well equipped to comment on that, but I think people have not really lost trust in the Swiss banking system. I think these things can unfortunately happen. But we remain optimistic and we do embrace crypto here.
It sounds like it's that whole situation that's opened the eyes of some people, and people have kept open-minded about other alternative systems. So, okay, all right. Oh, that's good to hear. So, on one last point about the trust and how people are learning about DeFi. Because one thing through my journey on learning about this different world is, just trying to find the information from good trusted sources about, again, what is a fact, what is fiction. We try to go through a few of these, and yeah, so finding trusted sources in the media. And now you're doing online writing, and I'm sure that you've kind of have a few go-to places to find good information to kind of reference on. So, just wondering, how do you go defining what's a trusted media source when you're learning about, DeFi or anything in general? Because a lot of the different media sources out there, I mean, depending on, what their motivations are, there may be a financial interest involved. And so just wondering, yeah, how do you go about, kind of taking a look at the sources, the independent sources, legacy sources, and deciding, what's a good trusted source and what to kind of follow so you can kind of inform yourself better.
Well, I think it depends if you're trying to read the news or if you're just trying to learn about blockchain in general or cryptocurrencies. I think there are some very reputable publications and sources. For example, Decrypt is one of my personal favorites, and they have an app so that you don't have to be at your computer, you can read it anywhere. I think what makes for a good and reliable source is really like to dig a little deeper and try to see like who the writers are, the content and the followers, who's like reading it. And of course, you always have to take everything with a pinch of salt, especially when you have sponsored articles that are pretending to be like organic news stories, but they're just paid promotional pieces. But I think, one, the more you read, you will really start to learn which ones are trustworthy and which ones are not. So I would say Cointelegraph is another good one. Decrypt is also good.
Thanks for sharing that, Karen. So, as we kind of move forward, every day is a new day in the crypto world, so many changes. Just wondering, what do you see happening, let's say, in the next couple years for the decentralized world of finance? Like, what would you say is like the biggest thing to look forward to and perhaps see, maybe integrated? Do you see more, countries adopting Bitcoin as legal tender or other cryptocurrencies? And just wondering, yeah, what do you think are like the next biggest couple of things going to be happening in the near term?
Without getting too technical, I think that there will be some great changes to crypto wallets. So it's called account abstraction, and that will allow people to have their own crypto wallets without a lot of the burdens that currently come with having one. For example, for now, you have this 12 phrase seed phrase, and you have to basically write down and store this. It's like the access key to your crypto wallet where you keep your funds. Of course, there are also hardware wallets, but still, I think there's when you're dealing with self-custody and you are essentially like your own bank, you are responsible. When you have a MetaMask wallet, for example, if you lose the password or you can't recover your wallet, there's no one to ask. It's your responsibility. So, with this new technology with account abstraction, I think we'll be able to create wallets, which are based on smart contract wallets, which means we will be able to give people a lot of different ways in which to access those wallets. And that will certainly help a lot. And otherwise, I am excited to see other countries in the world start to accept these digital assets and tokens and cryptocurrencies. Also, apart from Bitcoin, there are other really good ones. Yeah, I would be excited to see that happening more to accept them as legal tender. But I think that the payment applications really need to keep up with that because for now it can be a little bit cumbersome to spend your crypto. But those are like the two main things I think that we really need in order to push forward and have made more adoption.
Thanks for giving us a bit of a glimpse of the future, Kieran. So we've covered a lot of, interesting topics here as part of the DeFi world. And as we kind of wind down this podcast, I always ask my guests a two-parter question to wrap things up. So here goes. What are you most grateful for, and what are you most looking forward to in the future?
So I'm most grateful to for having good health and to be surrounded by good people because those are two things that money can't buy and that you can't always fix. And what I'm most looking forward to is an opportunity for everyone to be able to experience like and to have an equal opportunity essentially for payments and to be able to enjoy a stable currency and to not experience some of the issues that they do, like inflation or unstable currencies. That would be the best thing.
Thanks, Karen. That's great. So those are some great words to leave us off with. And if people want to know more about you, where can they find you?
LinkedIn would be best, and I'm also on Twitter, so you can find me as Blockchain Babe.
Thanks, Karen. Thanks for sharing. And we'll be sure to add those details to our show notes. So that's a wrap for episode 17. Thanks for joining us, and namaste, everyone.